Welcome to episode 70 of the Men Who Save Football, the Dundalk FC Fancast. This is a post-match reaction to a dramatic night in Finn Park. And guys, the positive, let's take our chairman's inspirational lead. We have to accentuate the positive. The positive is that we're still in the FAI Cup on Saturday morning. Now, is that outcome one that you would have taken before a ball was kicked last night?
Before a ball was kicked, I would take that because you know the old cliches. Going up to Ballybuffet, it's hard to get a result up there. We are in absolutely dire form. So given our string of results, given that we were going up to Hearts, given that, you know, they would have had a huge amount of motivation to, you know, obviously to get, so close to, you know, a cup semi-final, that going before a ball is kicked, yeah, you'd probably take maybe that... that we'd still be in the cup on Saturday morning. But given that totally evaporates when you get the actual story of the game itself, because, and you know, the story of the game is that we threw away a two-goal lead, which is, I mean, for all the things that we've witnessed over the coming of the previous weeks and this season, this is probably one of the worst because, you know, we've just had absolutely dire performances, games where no one looks like they care, stuff like this. But to be, you know, half an hour, 20 minutes from a cup semi-final, 3-1 up, they can't throw this away. I mean, we've lost lots of games. We've seen lots of games being lost this season. We've seen heroics in Europe where you're like, oh my God, we were, a lick of paint away, you know, as Bill says, if you think positively, if Dave McMillan's boot was a few inches longer, we are, you know, continuing on in Europe. But this is the inverse of all that, because we were ahead, we were two goals ahead, and all you had to do was keep keep things solid, and we conspired to throw that away. So being still in the cup on Saturday morning after all that, I don't think there's any positives to pull from it at all.
Well, there's just no pleasing some people. Martin, can you be any more optimistic?
I can. If I'm going to take the positives from last night, I'm going to say that it was a really entertaining match. Like, I thoroughly enjoyed watching it. It was bananas in some places, but it was really, I think, exciting and you know, sort of well worth the €5 or whatever I had to stump up to watch it on LOI TV. The first half was a bit frantic. And I want to say that, like, I don't think there is anything wrong with a 3-3 draw away to Finn Harps at the moment. Like, they are in really, really good form. They've beaten, you know, Shamrock Rovers lately. They've beaten, like, several other clubs. They're on a sort of surge up the table. As Rory said, we've been in dire form, right? So going into the match, I wasn't really expecting, I think, all that much from us. And you can see by the quality they had in the team, like the Obolabi finish for the first goal was incredible. Like, that was a real sort of fine finish from him. So you can see the sort of quality that they've got on their side. Now, definitely the sending off affected the match hugely. And I think if there was something to be probably disappointed about Dundalk's first half performance, which I thought was in general, like, really, really good. The tempo was really high. Like, we pressed them very well. The quality, I think, that we showed, like, midfield and up front making chances, I think, was very, very good. But if there was a problem, a criticism of the first half performance, it was that we weren't further ahead. Like, in the last 10 minutes of the first half, we had, you know, 3 or 4 shots cleared off the line. There was all sorts of scrambles. Like, it looked like we were, you know, really putting them under huge pressure. And I thought it was the first time since the Vitesse game that we have actually looked like we were dominating another side. Like, they were on the ropes and we were, you know, sort of going for it. And so the second half was, I think, a big surprise to me because we just let the tempo drop. And I think, like, we joked in the group chat that I came in with some criticism saying we have let the tempo drop far too low before we immediately scored and then had to retract that and say, no, we're managing the game perfectly. But, you know, they were down to 10. We had the man advantage. We were 2 goals up. We were cruising, right? If we had kept playing at a high tempo, I thought we were just going to, like, sweep past them. But instead, the tempo dropped and dropped. The game seemed to be, like, petering out a bit. And then they got the second goal. And it's just, I suppose, yet another sign that we cannot defend set pieces. Like, this has been a pattern time and again. We're seeing it week in, week out. Like, every time there's a free kick or a corner or something like that, like, we are just struggling with the basics of organization. And there's so much turnover in personnel. It's hard to really blame it on any individual person, right? It's a sort of systemic effect in the defense at the moment. And the third goal for Finn Harps was just unbelievable. I mean, I want to say that it was atrocious defending, that like it was a big high ball into the box with the last kick of the game. Like, somebody should have just met that with their head, and it was all done and dusted. But incredible quality, I think, from Sean Boyd. Like, that takedown, his first touch was unbelievable. Now, I don't know if he meant it, but he also took the ball away from the one defender who was likely to tackle him at the same time. Like, it was an incredible touch. And probably, I think, from a Dundalk perspective, we're not going to look at that goal and say, like, what a wonderful piece of, like, skill and quality it was. Like, we're going to be looking at it from the other angle. But I thought, like, there was so much about that game that was actually, like, surprisingly, you know, high quality, entertaining and stuff like that, that I thought it was a very enjoyable spectacle.
If we just kind of go back through the major events of the game, you're right, it sort of opened rather cagily. Really, very little happened in the first 15 minutes as the two teams sort of just kind of got to measure one another. Dundalk were beginning to establish a good spell of possession. And then, kind of typical of us recently, we conceded the first goal. And to tell you, I thought that was the worst goal, because we had seemingly won that ball, given it away again, won the ball back, so for a second time, before we conceded possession rather cheaply yet again. And we let Tunde Olabi in, and he just like finished with, once again, it's a goal that's coughed up from our own possession. And we haven't really made the Finn Harps work very hard for it. It's another one of these goals where, you know, the opposition, you know, come up trumps against us without really having done much. Because before that, you know, neither team had really done much in the game. And then we get thrown this absolute lifeline 6 minutes later. Now, I have to admit, when I saw the incident where John Murray kind of like centers to what is an open goal and it comes off, I didn't detect the handball and the red card. But suddenly you're thrown these, I'm not saying it wasn't there, I'm just saying I didn't see it first time. So if it was there, the ref spotted it, or the linesman spotted it, kind of well done them, because it usually is the type of thing would be missed. I don't know if there was any controversy that the player, the Finn Harps player, didn't really appeal or protest. So I presume that it was a fair cop. But we're now thrown this double lifeline, 10 men for the guts of an hour, or slightly more, and also a penalty to get you right back into the game. And I think after Hoban converts that, which once again, I think Patrick Hoban had another, you know, stellar performance as regards the amount of effort he expended, you're back in the game. And then Sean Murray comes up with one of these daisy cutters. I don't know whether he caught the goalkeeper by surprise or whether it was just the pace of the shot or what it was. He has this rather speculative effort, and you're 2-1 up and you're cruising. And as you say, we had several more chances. We had them on the ropes. We could have been 3-1 at halftime. When we get into the second half, something that was noticeable was you could never really determine or detect evidence that we were playing against 10 men. Finn Harps seemed to match us in energy levels, and you never really detected a period where, you know, the extra man was counting. There was a spell where we kind of got comfortable possession and we were beginning to just pass it around amongst ourselves. But then we sort of drifted into almost playing like we had the 10 men and they had the 11. And what's really frustrating is, all right, if you get to 5 minutes to go with a 2-goal lead, I think that the belief in the opposition is, right, well, we're not going to get back into this. So we were just 2 minutes short of that. And we concede, you know, from a corner. I wouldn't put it down as a goalkeeping error. It's just that every corner is something of a lottery and sometimes the opposition win. So it was just one of those things. But in that period that preceded it, we had begun to just give the initiative totally to Finn Harps. We were giving away possession. And in the past, a more savvy Dundalk team, you know, you would have seen a player just break down the wing, win a throw-in or a free kick high up the pitch, slow the game down, get that moment of passing going again. And we had periods of possession in the game, but we just seemed to be unable to get a period of pressure relieving possession, some sort of out ball that won a throw in high up the pitch that allowed us to get our shape back, or a couple of passes that maybe ended up with a Michael Duffy counter attack or a Patrick Hoban counter attack. It was rather like, once again, the end of an ice hockey game where we were just frantically shoveling the ball down the channels and it was immediately coming back in. So we ended up with about 15 minutes of Finn Harps just having this aerial bombardment off the goal. And chance after chance after chance. And each one of those, similar to the corner, is a lottery ticket. And eventually they were going to probably win something. It happened 35 seconds after injury time had expired. But nonetheless, as Martin said, there was an element of quality to the takedown. But what's disappointing is you would think that we have the players in our squad who are savvy enough to say, listen, when I get the ball here, I can't just launch it down the channel because it's coming straight back in again. I just need to drop the shoulder, carry it out, you know, kick it off a defender, win a throw-in, do something a little bit clever. And the fact that we lack that cleverness to see the game out kind of is what was more than a little bit disappointing about the final result.
After the game, I was listening to a bit of the Townend lads, their reaction to it. And they were talking, obviously, like ourselves, about, you know, how did this happen? And they mentioned, for instance, that people have been, singling out Abebe and Sonny Navistad for criticism recently, but that the two of them weren't on the pitch, okay? But I think Martin has said it. It's a systemic problem in defence. And when we talked last week about, you know, the hole that Dundalk have, the fatal flaw that allows opposition to get us, I mean, we were talking about this systemic problem in defence, the inability to deal with these things. As Martin said, it's set pieces. Also, a general staticness. Like the amount of times you see Dundalk defenders just standing still and watching the world go by them in these incidents is really incredible. So I think it's a endemic, systemic inability to defend that transcends any individual players. And you're wondering, you know, where is this coming from?
I have a theory. Would you like to hear my theory?
I always.
It's radical. It might be way out there. This might be just an insane notion. But I think it was said by, actually, it was a Bulls listener of our podcast who tweeted when Chris Shields was about to leave, said, I'd love Chris Shields to come to Bulls. He's the type of player who would stop us conceding the late goals that we're prone to conceding. So we had the best defensive midfielder in the league. We sold the best defensive midfielder in the league. Suddenly, our defence looks way more fragile and we concede goals, the type of which we have not been conceding for years. Basically, the decision to sell Chris Shields has weakened our ability to see these games out. And, you know, his would-be rival for that position, Wilfred Zahibo, is in the infirmary and unlikely to play again. When you asked last night, who is our anchor man? We don't have one that's dedicated to that position as you know, with the same prowess of it as Chris Shields was. So I think it's entirely obvious. Once again, you know, that's a decision that was made. The fire sale, 35 grand, whatever they got for Chris. They could have done what they did with Patrick McElhenney. He said, no, you're with us till the end of the season. We need to escape relegation, the relegation vortex. And we still have a cup to play for. And at the time, we still had Europe to play for. So, you know, it's just so frustrating. It brings it back to the leadership off the field. I mean, we without going into that whole conversation again, basically, we had really, really bad recruitment. We spent lavishly on players that can't do it and are either now halfway out of the club or they're injured or they're unavailable. And we, to make up for the stupid money that was spent on bad signings, the Peak Six made the decision to sell off Chris Shields for buttons. And we see the consequences of it last night. I mean, we would undoubtedly be in a FAI Cup semi-final already if we had him doing his stuff last night. I mean, he's exactly the type of player who, you know, gets possession, tries to break out, feels the contact, gets a free kick, relieves that pressure. You know, that composure just to get you possession and get you back into your rhythm. And nobody else could quite do it the way that he would usually do it. And that's kind of been evident in a lot of our games. So, you know, I think you do, you know, it's the wider question. Like, you know, we have sort of looked at the performances of Dundalk as we've had this dreadful season. And we've willed them to play back to their potential. We know that Dan Cleary, Andy Boyle, quality defenders. We know that Cameron Dumigan, you know, is capable of great things. I think most people, you know, weren't surprised to see Peter Cherry come back in. And another consolation is at least none of the goals were goalkeeping howlers. You know, Cherry looked relatively composed, and I think the defence was a little bit more assured with him there. But it seems that without Chris Shields to protect that defence, we are more vulnerable, and it's almost obligatory that Dundalk will concede two goals in every game they play these days. And that's just the effect of that.
I think that's maybe too simplistic a sort of an explanation for the whole thing. I mean, I do want to say that the loss of Chris Shields isn't felt by this team, right? Because he was, you know, sort of player of the year a couple of years ago in the league. Like, there's no doubt that Chris is a tremendous player and tremendous quality in the side. And definitely, like, his sort of composure on the ball, I think, you know, sort of would stand out as a thing that you think would be enhanced by having him in the team, at least. But at the same time, I think Chris was in the team this season for half a year, and we were still conceding plenty of goals at the time. And I don't think, like, the absence of Chris Shields is really telling the whole story of what's going on here. I think Ian Sharkey said on Twitter last night, or maybe earlier this morning, that he still thinks there's a fitness issue at play. And I'm sort of inclined to agree as well. Like, we talked after the Waterford game that the team seemed to tire really badly in the second half. And I think the Longford game straight afterwards, while we conceded in the first half, like, it was apparent that we really weren't able to set the tempo in the second half. And the game really sort of petered out with us without us making a chance. Likewise, in the Sligo game, once we went behind, didn't seem to be able to lift it. And last night, you would say that after about, you know, 75 minutes, like, despite having an extra man, we really did seem to wilt as well. And when you think about, you know, Harps having to play for almost an hour with 10 men and us with an extra man, like, it really should have been an opportunity for us to be able to, you know, like I say, lift the tempo and just sort of tire them out. And we didn't do it at all. If anything, it was the reverse. So it's very tempting, I think, to look at the team and say that something is amiss in terms of, like I say, their fitness. Now, a couple of weeks ago against Waterford, I think it was like Sean Murray's first start back in, you know, something like 7 months. And you could see that, like, he really sort of struggled in that game. I think he's had, you know, several games under his belt since then and looked a lot fresher last night. So you can see, like, people like himself, Dan Cleary and stuff like that, like, building back into it a little bit. But at the same time, I think generally, like, there is still a problem there that we are not able to go for 90 minutes. We are not able to raise the tempo above other teams, which was very much a feature of our game during, like, the Stephen Kenny and first Vinnie Perth era. So I don't know, like, that seems, I think, very wrong to me initially. But I think in terms of conceding the goals, I still think this is an organizational issue rather than a personnel issue. And I think maybe something that surprises me a little bit is, you know, you're looking to some of your more senior players, like the likes of Andy Boyle, not just to, like, have a good game themselves, but to organize other people around them, you know, to be telling their colleagues where to be making sure that they're alert, you know, to be sort of, like I say, organizing and coordinating the players around them. And that seems to be a big missing feature of our game right now, right? That's not happening. Like, could Chris Shields have contributed to some of that? Like, he definitely could. But like I say, earlier in the season, we were also conceding a lot of goals like this. So I don't know if that's, you know, really a catch-all solution.
The other thing I think, like, valid points made on both sides there. I think it's a perfect storm of all these issues. I definitely think we are really missing Chris Shields, okay? Because if you think about that brittleness. But also, I mean, I'm just looking again at the team we put out last night. And I mean, you said it, Ken, like, on Twitter and on WhatsApp, like, you know, that's like a strong team. You know what I mean? Look at the player for player, look at those names. And sometimes you could look at it and go, ah, we've been decimated. You know, peak six have let players go. We've injury crisis. But then still, there's, you know, excuses only go so far when you look at the names out there. And, okay, yeah, as Martin said, could Chris Shields contribute to organising that defence? Definitely. But Andy Boyle, I mean, Andy Boyle, like, who has, you know, was like a stalwart of the European campaigns, who has shown time and time again his ability. I mean, he would walk into any team in the country, you know, in straight into the defence. He should be able to, you know, organise a defence. Like Dan Cleary, look at the names we have there, okay? That defence should be able to organise itself. What springs to mind when Martin talks about fitness is, and I'm no expert in this area, okay? But is it a mentality which is, a mentality which is translating to the head dropping, you know? Because we've definitely seen it, that second half wilt. It's interesting. I was talking to a friend just before halftime yesterday, and he said, we should really be able to push on into the second half. And I said, I fear that the halftime whistle is going to kill that momentum, and it'll be a different second half. And I think that's what happened. You said it earlier on, which is that the game went much lower tempo in the second half. You know, Martin is ascribing it to a kind of possibly a fitness issue. I think it's a mentality issue that they don't have the mental fortitude to keep going, and that is translating to this physical wilting. You know, and I said to you before we recorded that it reminds me of Arsenal. The latter years of Arsenal, Arsene Wenger, there was always this talk of brittleness. You know, when you have the famous incidents like the 4-0 to Newcastle that they threw away and things like this. But Arsenal are kind of known for this kind of having a pretty good squad, but just mental weakness. And people are always ascribing this in a brittleness, mental weakness. They don't like it up them, all this kind of stuff. And that's what I wonder, because you look at the players, you look at some of the names in that defence who, you know, should be able to organise themselves. But just endemic throughout the team is just this, you know, we were talking last week of this laboured analogy about, you know, being able to blow up the Death Star by finding the weakness. But I think we're hitting self-destruct at times. I mean, last night, obviously, Finn Harps took their chances, but we opened up that big hole and said, come on, true, you know, and didn't really mount much of a defence. Against it and left it to them. So I can only put it down to some kind of mixture of all those factors. The off the field chaos, you talked about in the podcast a few weeks ago, you know, people constantly losing people from within the club, just disappearing and going, seeing your teammates going, constant chaos circling the club. I think that's translating true to on pitch chaos.
And I take your point, and there probably is an element of, you know, a lack of confidence, a lack of the levels of mental resilience that we would have had in previous years. And of course, all of that kind of confidence, resilience, determination, you know, it probably came from having voices like Rory Higgins and John Gill, and, you know, having a larger element to the coaching staff and, you know, more experience and people who had been there and done it as players and coaches. And now it's very much more or less Finney on his own. And we know that apparently the budget can't be extended to an assistant manager. There's a sort of a smoke and mirrors every time you ask who the opposition analyst is. So probably that might be contributing to a sense that, you know, that we all kind of perceive that this is a team winding down to a sort of, in a terminal decline. But yet, you know, with all that off-field stuff that we have constantly gone on about and complained about and lamented, when you are gifted an hour against 10 men and a 2-goal lead, you know, you would still look at that team sheet. And I think, you know, Vinny did shuffle the pack as well as he could. I think most fans would have been pleased to see Cherry come back in. Like, given the previous performance of the other two goalkeepers, I think that was a call that most people would have said, yeah, that's a reasonable one. And Dan Cleary coming in for Sonny Nedestad, I think most people thought would have been, you know, a good call as well. Sean Murray coming in for Ben Amar, also a reasonable call. And you can see that did pay off. So I think given the cards that he has to play, I thought the selection was okay last night. The approach was decent. Just really disappointing to get into that position. And it just seems that there's this now fallibility in Dundalk. I mean, I think, you know, Finn Harps will probably come to Oriel Park with quite a high degree of confidence, given what they managed to do with 10 men. Now, we will have home advantage, and hopefully that will count for a lot, because, as you say, Ballybuffet is a tough place to go to, generally speaking. But Finn Harps have already done quite well at Oriel Park this year. So with that in mind, I mean, do you think Tuesday night represents a good opportunity for Dundalk to set right what should have been a win? How do you think Tuesday will go?
I'm finally going to don the positivity hat and say we definitely have a chance to do this. I think if home advantage could be a big thing, because I think Finn Harps had huge home advantage last time. I mean, the crowd was big and up for it, and there was great energy. As Martin said, it was a very entertaining game. If our fans can generate a similar level of energy, I think that'll give them a real boost. I mean, as Martin said, it was the most dominant we've been since Vitesse over a team. So for big chunks of yesterday, until the self-destruct started, we were on top on that game. There's no reason to believe that can't be replicated at home. Finn Harps will definitely be up for it. But then Dundalk will also be up for it too, because it's like a get-out-of-jail card, you know what I mean? And hopefully they will learn lessons from this, although history, you know, you look to history and you look to recent history to say what to predict, what do you think will happen next? If I look at history to make a prediction, it won't be good. But I think that as Martin said, there was a huge amount of positives on the pitch last night until that chaotic end. You know, that almost in a way, it that's the thing which is freshest in your memory, how the finale to the game. But for large chunks of that, we were good for our 3-1 until that second half started to grind down. So if they could, you know, if they could play like that, as I said, I think the shuffling of the team worked. Another thing though about last night is it does show how extremely weak our squad is. Because if you're 3-1 up and you're away in a cup quarter final, you might start to bring on players to shore it up, more veteran players. We don't have those players. I mean, we were bringing on Leahy got a short cameo at the end, but like we had very little options to bring on anything to fresh legs. You know, we don't have the option of fresh legs. Any fresh legs we have are very young, and if you're putting on, I mean, it's great to see some of those young players and they have a lot of promise, but they're not who you want to bring on when defending a lead against Finn Harps, who have sniff of a semi-final. We have very, very few options. There was some rotation there, obviously, and I agree. I think it was great to see Dan Cleary back. It was good to see Cherry in. It's great to see the return of Dara Leahy. But we have very few options to shuffle things around. But I would be positive. I think that we can right the wrongs of the last 20 minutes or so.
If we're going to be positive, and it's great that we are, I think the chairman's magic spell on us is obviously having an effect. You know, we can see that the replay is retrievable. If we look at the kind of longer form cycle of this season, we're now getting into the sort of, you know, the death throes of this season. And there's a thing whereby in any endeavor, in life in general or in any specific project, the decisions you make do eventually encounter reality and you sort of get what you deserve. We've kind of railed against, lamented, bemoaned, complained about the whole strategic direction of the club over the last 12, 13, 14, 15 months. And we've bemoaned bad strategic decision after bad strategic decision after calamitous recruitment after calamitous recruitment. Our Dundalk FC sort of in the appropriate position league-wise and performance-wise in the cups for those decisions. Basically, have those decisions now just brought us to this reality? Are we kind of where we deserve to be?
I think definitely in terms of the battle between order and chaos, right? Like what you're looking for is a settled side with a settled coaching staff, who have particular targets in mind, who have, you know, an understanding of the way that they want to play and how they want to play. And if you want to bring, you know, one or two, you know, new names into it, slowly sort of easing them into the sides. Like I think, Ken, you always talk about McElhenney and Benson joining in 2016, right? The way that we did. I think Robbie Benson probably didn't play for the first 6 weeks or something like that while he was eased in. You know, that is sort of the way to do it. And I think as soon as you get into a situation where you have really high turnover of playing staff in particular, right? It's hard for those players to learn one another's game. Like the mentality and, you know, the sense of cohesiveness is very brittle. And I think if you add into that, I think coaching staff coming and going, you know, huge numbers of departures behind the scenes. If you look at, I think, the turnover of playing staff in the middle of the season, where all of a sudden we went from this, you know, sort of, what would you say, overwhelming numbers, suddenly to like being trimmed off, and not just, you would say, like trimming the fat off the edge of the squad, but, you know, core players leaving as well. Maybe adding in as well, like the extremely lengthy injury list we have at the moment, which obviously, you know, the club isn't in control of, but is also a thing that happened. I think that's just leading to, you know, yes, that is, these are all, I think, good reasons why the team is where they are at the moment in ninth place. I think it's a bad strategy overall. Like there's no point in us, I think, just sort of repeating ourselves over and over again. But I think the strategy for recruitment of the club was very flawed. These mistakes, I think, were the outcomes were predictable. And here we are. But I don't think any of us predicted it would be this bad.
Yeah, that's one thing I would say is I would tend to agree that we probably do deserve where we are, given everything that we know. And let's not speak of it again. I think you can go back to last week's podcast if you want the extended monologues on what's going on. But as Martin just said, I don't think anyone predicted it would be this bad. And I suppose, yes, we probably do deserve it. But the thing that does stand out for me is, again, if you look at that team on paper and you look at the manager, I think we have the pieces that should have, like post-Europe, going out of Europe, we should have edged our way up the table. But it has been the complete opposite. I think it is pretty shocking how bad we've been. And for all the disseminate, you know, for the squad being picked apart and key players leaving and injuries and the coaching staff, you know, being diminished, I still think that team should have won a whole bunch of the games we have not won. So that's the X factor, which is genuinely puzzling. Although it's not puzzling, I think it comes from the general swirl of chaos around the club. I would say, if you ask me for my grand theory, it is that the players cannot raise their game because it is just a maelstrom of mismanagement and chaos around the club that probably seeps through to every aspect of them. We said it last week, you know, lack of knowledge of whether or not you have a contract and stuff like this or what's going to happen. They're all human beings, you know, they are affected by this stuff, and it's probably demoralizing. That's probably the word I would use. I know fans have said, you know, all the stuff about they don't earn their paycheck, they look like they don't care, blah, blah, blah. But they are probably deeply, deeply demoralized by the situation. And human beings, when deeply demoralized, will react in a certain way. I just think it is shocking about how bad it has become.
Well, off the field, in the boardroom, we may be led by donkeys, but on the field, there's still a few lines when you look at the team selection. So we'll be hoping those lines can roar on Tuesday night and devour Finn Harps and make our way to a semi-final. Who knows? Maybe we'll have a repeat of last year when we ended up in a cup final and against all the odds, proved that the Invincibles weren't so invincible. We're still the holders of this trophy, so let's not give it up without a fight. We'll be back on Tuesday night to discuss the outcome of the Finn Harps replay, and everybody will be down in Oriel Park, hopefully cheering the lads on and giving them that little bit of inspiration that perhaps they lack. Another important notice for Dundalk fans is the in-person meeting at the Supporters Club has been moved to Monday evening in Oriel Park. So I hope that all the people who have signed up for the Supporters Club can get down there. And that's an organisation that everybody should get behind, and hopefully we can get a voice for the fans that will be listened to by those who are currently the stewards of the club. I'd like to thank our two contributors for today, Rory Murphy and Martin Mullen. And we'll be back again on Tuesday to discuss hopefully what will be an impending visit to the semi-final of the FAI Cup. Thanks for listening. Thanks for all your contributions on Twitter. And we'll see you at the next episode.